morning. This is the Subcommittee on Human Services. It's February 12th, and this morning we're going to hear about Senate Bill 5521. It's a public hearing. We have opened a public hearing on the long-term care ombudsman. Ella Vogt, would you lead us through the first part of this?
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the Subcommittee, so today, as the Senator mentioned, you have long-term care ombudsman before you. In OLIS, you'll find some materials. The agency does not have a PowerPoint presentation, but there is a narrative document in OLIS for you to look at today. They'll be speaking, I think, in relationship to that. There's also a document that the standard legislative fiscal office document in the drive as well. What you may find notable about this agency is there's been a rather large increase in its budget between the two biennia, between the current biennium and the next biennium. And this is due to new legislation, both in 2013 and 2014 sessions, that added some responsibilities to the agency. They're now responsible for working with residents of care facilities who have mental illness or developmental disabilities. That was the expansion of their base program, as well as they've taken on the public guardian and conservator program. So they've had a lot of new stuff going on, and that has demonstrated or has resulted in a large increase in their budget, at least from a percentage basis. It's still a small agency with not very many employees.
Thank you. And just to start this public hearing off, there'll be a work session at the end of the public hearing. Yeah. We'll be rescinding Mary Yeager going to veterans. So that won't happen. And if that doesn't work, we're going to put veterans under ombudsman. I'm not sure how this is going to work, but the way it works is going to work, okay? This is an agency that if every agency in this state worked as well as this agency does, we would be meeting every fourth year. We wouldn't need to meet up here. All we do is pass some budgets and leave and be out of here. This is an extending agency run primarily on volunteers. You're going to hear all about it here this morning. But we really are going to miss Mary and her husband, who we get as a volunteer. You know, I laughingly call him the Jägermeister because he does such a great job for us. And I'm looking forward to hearing your last testimony in front of us, Mary. But good luck to you and veterans. They need help, and I'm sure you're the person to do it. I assume you're dragging your poor spouse along with you. And we're only half facetious about a change between the ombudsman and veterans. We're going to be talking about that a little bit. So please come up and start your presentation. Yes. Okay. And I'd like to have, if it's okay with everybody, I'd like to have Senator Johnson come up first. I'm sure she has other duties this morning, and I think she wants to give us some testimony. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your courtesy. Colleagues, for the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I have the privilege of representing Senate District 16. Since I last testified before you in support of the Ombudsman's budget, I have experienced a stay in an assisted living facility. Unable to walk, unable to go to the little senator's room by myself, unable to turn over in bed, most of the acts of daily living were well out of my reach. I know firsthand what it means to push the light and wait and wait and wait. I've lifted the cover off of tepid dinners of mystery meat, struggled to get a drink of water at night, and been manhandled and mauled by poorly trained and supervised staff. The difference is I had a huge support network, as well as a telephone and a feisty disposition to make my own case. The difference is I got better and I went home. You have in front of you a lifeline budget. You have the power to adequately fund the watchdogs who are capable of being the voice for the voiceless. I implore you to keep these tireless volunteers prowling the halls, advocating, comforting, communicating, insisting on safety and sanitation. This is one of the smallest numerical budgets you'll see. It is the mightiest in terms of impact. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And yeah, you know, you're better than a cup of coffee sometimes in the morning to wake me up, so thank
you. It is.
Tell me what you're doing next time.
I'm just kidding.
I think I got it.
Pretty quickly.
Good morning, co-chairs, Senator Bates, and Representative Nathanson, and members of the subcommittee. My name is Dan Dunham. I am an Oregon certified long-term care ombudsman, now in my 10th year serving facilities in Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln counties, and I'm currently chair of the Residential Facilities Advisory Committee, which advises the Oregon Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman. As a side note, as an ombudsman, among other things, this past summer and early fall, I visited 69 foster homes in Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln counties. Those were not extended visits, but they made a lot of difference to those homes, some of which had not been visited for quite some time. With me today are David Berger, interim long-term care ombudsman, the gentleman at the end with the beard, Mary Yeager, right here, as you all know, immediate past Oregon long-term care ombudsman, and the person primarily responsible for the preparation of the budget we are here to present, and Jerry Walker, our indefatigable volunteer budget officer. Also with us is Tamara Brickman from the DAS CFO's office. As you may know, and you've already mentioned, Mary has joined the Office of the Long-Term Care of the Oregon Veterans Affairs Long-Term Care Effort, actually, where she will continue her stellar service to Oregon's frail elderly citizens as the primary advocate for Oregon's aging veterans. We are pleased and honored that she can be here today to join in the presentation of the 2015-2017 budget. Mr. Walker will lead our presentation, followed by Mary, and then Mr. Berger, and your questions.
Mary. Thank you, Dan. Good morning, everyone. Chair Bates and Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, especially those I've not had the pleasure to talk to before, this is our third time before you. And this is really a very small agency that has had a significant growth spurt. I think we're probably in our early teenage years. We thought, since you're going to hear an awful lot about the accomplishments of the agency over the last 2 years, really over the last 6 years, that it would be prudent to begin with sort of a simple summary of the budget request, since we don't have a fancy PowerPoint. I'd be delighted to produce one, but it just doesn't seem worth the effort. The budget request in really round numbers is $6,600,000. That, for contrast, about 5.5 hours of the first day of DHS's budget request this time. So about 5:30 in the morning on July the 1st, they will have spent our entire budget request for the biennium. It's just the way the numbers work out. That's what $10 billion is compared to $6.5 million. There are three parts of our budget. The first is the main program that you're all familiar with that Senator Johnson referred to, the Long-Term Care Ombudsman. And that request is about just under $3 million. And Lori will be happy to point out to you, as I will too, that that has grown significantly over the last three biennia, because there were 90 volunteers when Mary began in 2009, and there are now 200. And so the cost of supporting those, which is the human resources necessary to support the operations of the volunteers, is what that's all about. Then there are two new programs. The first is what we've come to call the Residential Facility Ombudsman, which is the same services, the same advocacy with volunteers for folks living in licensed group homes and adult foster homes with mental illnesses and developmental disabilities. And that program is both adults and children. So there's about 1,800 of such buildings in the state, and we're in the midst of organizing ourselves to recruit and train the volunteers to go to those buildings all the time to advocate for those kids. And for those of you who were on the committee last time, you might remember the guy with the ponytail who testified before you, who owns three of those buildings and rode over the mountains in the middle of the winter on his motorcycle to tell you how important it was for his residents to have advocates. I remember that significantly. That budget is about $1.5 million. That's new, so we're starting from scratch. And then the last piece is the new public guardian and conservatorship program for the state, another piece of new legislation. That's an experiment. The budget there is about $2 million. And that is a small staff, the guardian, a couple of deputies, and 2 years of trying to figure out, along with the help of various representatives from around the state, how to work a new public guardian program for folks in Oregon who don't have any family or money to help themselves. So together, in really round numbers, the old mainstay program, the Ombudsman program, is about $3 million. The new facility program for folks with mental illnesses and developmental disabilities is about $1.5 million. That gets us to $4.5 million. And then the public guardian program is just over $2 million, and that gets us to $6,600,000 in budget requests. And by way of contrast, when we all started this in 2009, the budget was $2,600,000. So that when Laurie says things have changed, they sure have. We've also added on a whole bunch of stuff. I'll be happy to answer any questions, but those are the numbers we're going to be talking to you about this morning.
Karen, any questions?
So in your packets, co-chairs and committee members, there's a sheet called the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Outcomes. That is actually produced by a volunteer who happens to be in the hearing room today, and actually illustrates the fact to me, and hopefully to you, most of the work of this agency is done by volunteers. It's a very small FTE pool, but in fact 80% of the accomplishments are performed by volunteers, not only in the metro area, not only on I-5, but in all parts of Oregon. The piece I want to highlight for you is actually a result of our appearance before you last session. I believe it was you, Senator Bates, who asked us what we could do to increase visits to adult foster homes. And with a small investment by the legislature, $200,000, we were able to hire one additional deputy. That deputy is now stationed in the Madras Central Oregon area, which allowed us to recruit a number of extra volunteers and actually deploy their goodwill to do special visits to adult foster homes in Oregon. So for our key performance measures, we were asked to try to hit 40% of the adult foster homes, and we actually visited 80% of them. So in terms of a regulatory inspection cycle, normally those facilities, 5 beds or less, are only visited by the inspectors every other year to renew their licenses. So you can imagine being that resident down a cul-de-sac in a place where there's no cell phone, and here comes your friendly ombudsman in Eastern Oregon who's driven 95 miles one way to get there to visit you. The power of our volunteers, I realize you all must deal with rolled up numbers, but our volunteers deal with the faces, the people, and the stories that make up those amazing statistics. And I'm happy to highlight the rest of the outcome sheet, but the other significant piece is that the volunteers documented 28,000 volunteer hours. Now, that doesn't mean many more weren't performed. We know of several volunteers who probably work more than they document, but in an effort to receive our federal and our state money, every activity of an ombudsman is documented. So just the documented contribution to the state of Oregon was 28,000 hours. If that is calculated at $21 an hour, which is a very low sum given the many careers our volunteers have had, that's well over $600,000 of contributed time to the residents of the state of Oregon. And I think we're all very, very proud, certainly of the staff in keeping this effort going, but it really comes down to the citizen volunteers all across the state who are making this work.
Before David steps to a microphone, I want to give you just a little bit of background. David Berger is also a deputy in the office. His assignment has been and continues to be in part the Portland metropolitan area, particularly Multnomah County. A few weeks ago, the advisory committee interviewed 3 deputies in the office to select someone to become and be appointed as the interim long-term care ombudsman for the state of Oregon. And I'm very pleased that David was able to step forward and candidate for that position. And he's been doing an amazing job just sliding in to lead the role in the office. And I'm going to ask him to say a few words at this time. David Berger.
Right. Dan, thank you for that kind introduction. And Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the subcommittee, good morning. I'm very excited about the prospects for the agency moving forward in the next biennium. There is much to accomplish, and I'm confident that we can get it done. Three big objectives for us. The first one is to continue to grow the long-term care ombudsman. This means recruiting and training more volunteers so we can get out to every licensed long-term care facility. As has been mentioned by some of the people here at the panel, with the strong support of this committee, we've doubled our coverage of the adult care homes from 40% to 80%. And this is really reflective of the tremendous effort of our volunteers getting out to these remote areas and being diligent and getting out to these tiny care facilities. I think we should strive to visit every single adult care home across the state, no matter how remote, and I believe that we can get that done moving forward. The second thing that we need to accomplish is to develop the new residential ombudsman program for people with mental illnesses and people with developmental disabilities. There are about as many of these group and foster homes as there are the adult care homes, so we definitely have our work cut out for us. As we bring new volunteers on to mirror the same type of program that we have in the long-term care ombudsman program right now, we'll need to develop specialized trainings to make sure we're able to suit the needs of these new communities where we'll be serving. Finally, our third objective is to complete development of the Oregon Public Guardian Program and Conservator Program, which began with the appointment of our first state ombudsman, state public guardian. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
As are we all.
Senator Winters.
I just have the fourth, because there's the missing piece. And that missing piece is, I understand, as everybody know, I'm very, very pro long-term care ombudsman because it kind of originated with my husband back a lot of years ago. But I missed the piece, and that is when you identify problems and trends, because, you know, for this body, as you actually do your work and the volunteers find situations, and some of them are then. And when you talked about your objectives, I did not hear that one as a part of the objectives of what problems that are encountered, and then or not, you know, because it's two ways. So some are doing excellent, and some may not be doing excellent.
Let me lead on that response, if I may, Senator Winters. Senator Johnson, in her comments, mentioned one of those issues, which is delays in responding to call-outs. That's one of the big issues that we as local ombudsmen run into. We have a goal that we really have little control over, but the goal is to put forward to you all in the near future, through legislation, some way of convincing the ownership of the long-term care facilities to add more staff. With the acuity level of the residents of long-term care in all of the facilities rising daily, they demand and require more attention and more support. And when we are doing staffing, when the ownership is doing staffing that is based on adequate, a measure called adequate care, a very soft, immeasurable concept, we have a lack of attention to this aging process that goes on in our facilities. That's one of our issues, one of the big goals. And it's really a very political issue. We're aware of that. We've put that issue before a number of people in organizations. I think we have good support for the issue. My own local senator, Sarah Gelser, is very much aware of this and has visited with me about it. That's one thing. Other members of the panel can suggest other of these goals.
And you don't have to do it now, but I think somewhere as you set your goals and objectives, that part of that is the report. that talks about finding the recommendations that come not just to one member of this body, so that this body, you know, in its broader context, actually receives that kind of information, if that's what you're finding out there as you do your business. You know, and I know we used to, Mary, you know, do have that recommendation part of the annual report, and that's the only thing that I'm suggesting is that you include that particular component. At least it helps me, and I think it helps others if we know what you're finding and encountered out there in the field.
Yes, Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, Senator Winters, thank you for your question. To be clear, the primary objective of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman is still to investigate and resolve resident problems. When we talk about the work that most of our volunteers do, we're talking exactly about that direct outreach to residents of licensed care facilities. Mostly, they are contacted because our volunteers are out visiting these buildings in person. Oftentimes, they are calling in our 800 number and asking for assistance. So we certainly track the issues that people are experiencing and work on both an individual case basis, but also on a policy basis to try and remedy these things so we can cut them off before they become problems that are experienced by residents. We do keep a list of our top 10 complaints, and for better or worse, it mostly remains consistent over time with questions about discharge and eviction, medication management, and quality of care at the top. I think we, you know, have definitely solved a lot of problems for individual consumers, and I'm very hopeful about ongoing conversations that we have with our partners at DHS and in licensing to resolve these at a systems level.
May I add one thing, co-chairs?
I just can't resist telling you the numbers. So that's a flaw in my personality, if you will. The 28,000 hours of volunteer time that David mentioned, that was about 12,500 actual visits to licensed facilities, Senator Winters. And those, and these numbers are in front of you someplace, but what's fun about those visits, the 12,500 visits produced about almost 6,000 inquiries from residents of those facilities. I've got a problem, I need help. Okay? The number's like 5,900 and something. Somebody who's reading the sheet can probably see it. Now, what happens to those? Well, first of all, we keep track of how long does it take a volunteer to respond to those complaints, how long does it take to address them, and then how did we do? That stuff's all in there. But the answer is less than 2 days to respond to those complaints, about 28 or 29 days to resolve them. Some of them that day, but you know, some of the problems are difficult. And about 95% of the cases are resolved to the satisfaction of the resident. Now, there's a chunk of those 5,900 or so problems that we can't deal with. And they get referred to licensing and APS and even volunteer legal services and things like that. And they take longer and are much more complicated. But the goal here is for our volunteers to resolve as many of those 6,000 I've got a problem right there as we possibly can, and we're doing really good at it.
I'm just asking you to share that with this body, you know, and I know we used to share that information so that we had, that's how we were able to say, yes, Mary needed more money because of the volume of what you were doing and the activity inside of it, of what you were having to do. Without that, you know, we have no way of knowing what problems you encounter as you conduct your business. Or what your greater need will be. And I'm just asking whoever's taking over from Mary, because I know we used to provide those kinds of reports where we know specifically what the volunteers were encountered, how frequently it was, which part of the state is having more difficulty than the other part of the state. So I'm just saying, share your tracking data with us so that we too know what's at hand, because those are the kinds of information that this body needs with which to say, from a budget standpoint, that yes, you do need their item to respond or whatever. That's the reason I raised that question.
Thank you, Senator Winters. I can get that information to this body.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you. One of the
top three complaints you listed was medication management. Could you please say just a bit more to describe what the types of issues are that you're being asked for help?
Absolutely. When we talk about problems with medication management, there are several different types that we see. Late delivery of medications, incorrect medications that were delivered, medications that arrived late from the pharmacy, struggles with coordination of care between pharmacies, primary care providers, and licensed care facilities are the big ones that we're taking a look at under that category.
Okay. Mr. Chair, a brief follow-up. This is alarming, quite alarming to hear that. And these are people who, if someone is savvy enough to be aware that it was late, needed to be taken on time, or even more disturbing, it was the wrong thing. It's hard enough to try to make those determinations yourself when you're reading words that you can't even pronounce.
Yes.
And, oh, were you supposed to remember to look for the dosage? Was the dosage, you know, right? And was it once or twice a day? It's hard enough. Even for me to read and interpret that, and I'm quite alarmed to hear that that's one of the top problems that we have. I'm not sure where to go with that, other than I have made a mental note of that now, and I'll probably be asking my co-chair how we might want to discuss it in another venue.
Right. Thank you.
Senator Starr-Haywood.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And if I may, I have two separate questions. The first is, you know, it strikes me as interesting or perhaps planned that earlier this week we heard a report about the staff who work in facilities that serve our senior and disabled populations. And one of the things that struck all of us was the level of turnover. And frankly, at least struck me, was the pretty low pay. Yes, above minimum wage, but not certainly what I would see as a living wage for most of these workers. And I'd be interested in your perspectives about how this problem affects the quality of care that people who your volunteers see on a daily basis. You know, how does this play into this problem?
Co-chairs and Senator Steiner-Hayward, one of the fascinating roles of being an ombudsman is that we get to see so many different types of care, so many different management styles, so many leadership initiatives. It is fascinating that with a reimbursement rate that is the same across the state, why are some facilities successful and why aren't others? And certainly wages and benefits are one of the issues. But secondly, leadership is an entirely different train and set of issues. A facility I visited in Ontario was not, I will tell you, not a beautiful building, but had such incredible life and spirit. And the residents were engaged. Some were coming to and from a hair appointment. There was a baking class going on in one side of the room. Why? There was an incredible energy, and I tell you, it is the leadership of that particular person. Just this weekend, Jerry and I visited, actually, you all know her, Jane Netboy, for the record, a volunteer in this capital, who's in a facility in Southwest Portland, who had a caregiver who told us she has been working there 17 years. She's been through three owners, and she is there for the residents. So some combination, certainly, of the wages and benefits combined with reimbursement, but combined with leadership, style, and the ability to energize and get a team to work together is somewhere in that answer. In terms of that data, that's beyond our agency's pay grade, but certainly there's other bodies that could get you that information.
Thank you. And this is actually a follow-up to Senator Winter's question. It occurs, and actually to Representative Nathanson's as well, it occurs to me to wonder about how you all work to identify patterns. For example, you mentioned that a lot of the complaints get resolved quickly, and that's all well and good unless you're seeing a pattern of complaints from the same facility, or with regard to the question that Representative Nathanson asked, if you're starting to see a trend across facilities with more problems with medication management or more problems with bed sores or whatever it is, people having certain kinds of complaints, how your agency works to identify those and then think about ways, who do you interact with to think about ways to prevent those problems from occurring?
Co-chairs and Senator Hayward, we do track that data, and the way we track it is when we either receive a call at the office or we send one of our volunteers out to work with a resident. The volunteer will describe the problem to us in a narrative, and then through the National Ombudsman Reporting System, we have codes that help us classify those. We quantify those codes and take a look at them on a quarterly basis so we can see what issues for residents are trending. What we do with that information is we work with our partners within the DHS system. Just on Monday, we had our most recent quarterly trends meeting with the Office of Licensing and Regulatory Oversight. It's interesting, that nexus between what the people in licensing say and what we see from a consumer perspective. And this relatively new meeting that we've been having has been very productive for us in terms of that information exchange, providing our partners at licensing with the information they need from a consumer perspective to be responsive, to target trainings, administrator alerts, use their partners in trade associations to make sure that we're developing the right types of trainings to minimize the problems that we see trending.
Quick follow-up, if I may, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. Mr. Berger, this is very helpful, and I'm curious, and you say relatively new, how new, and do you have any sense of how the information you're providing is actually being used in the real world?
New within the last year, I believe we just had our fourth quarterly trends meeting with our partners at licensing. So here's how the information is used. We have the meeting where we identify trends, we identify a few problems, and then we break into smaller work groups. One of the issues that we identified at our last trends meeting with them was a slower response time than we would like to see in investigations of neglect or abuse in nursing facilities. We've selected a few case studies that we thought would be good examples to help licensing understand things from a consumer perspective, and we'll work together to develop the trainings and administrative interventions that are needed to minimize those consumer difficulties.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to hear that those are happening. It's a really good thing.
Representative Kenny Geyer, you've been very patient.
Thank you. I was going to actually raise a lot of the same issues they did, so I'll just pile on to that train. I've had three different opportunities for direct insight into the program. One was following Mary and one of your ombudsmans around at a long-term care facility in my district. One is a friend of mine who was the former COO of Janus Youth Programs, who was an ombudsman himself. I know that he's worth more than, after 25 years at Janus, more than $21 an hour, so I'm sure that's an average, but I know the program, you're understating what the value of the program is. And the third was, I guess it's a quarterly meeting that you have with all the ombudsmen in the Portland area, where a lot of these issues got to surface. So I had the opportunity to see both the direct service involvement as well as the opportunity to raise what are the issues that rise to the top that contribute to your top 10. And I just want to, you know, again, reinforce what my colleagues have been saying about how that last piece of, you know, you're gathering the information, you're sharing it with DHS, you're sharing it, you know, you're trying to resolve everything you can within those levels. That last piece of reporting back to us so that we can make sure not just to support your budgetary requests, which in my view, we cannot expand this fast enough, but what are the policy implications? One of the issues that was raised at that monthly meeting,
yes,
with dozens of people in the room was the issue of, and this gets to the staffing issue, that there's not a lot of incentives in the system to really take care in the long-term care facility to take care of issues because the fine for, I think it was negligence or neglect or something, is less than an animal abuse fine. I forget what it was, $300.
Yeah.
And people were saying, you know, until we make a decision through the legislative branch to mandate higher fines, there's not a lot of incentive to make sure that those kind of issues are prevented. Those are the kind of things that final link bringing back a report to us, working with, you can't, you know, and I also remember asking, well, what is the legislative process for you? You're a teeny agency. Mostly public agencies have to go through the governor's budget to put their POPs. Like, you know, how do we make sure that the very valuable information that you're getting gets back to us? So that's, I just want to reinforce what my colleagues have been saying in terms of that final step, that that we can be a problem solver in collaboration with you.
Thank you.
Just quickly, Mary, because this was actually something had been that had been done in the past, and I know the report is put together for the feds, and so, you know, my question is, why was the report not done for this body? Because we have had you do the reports to us. And I'm just curious as to the federal pieces getting the information because it's required by them, and why can't that just not be what you're doing for the federal government, be duplicated and given to us? The other piece, and we've had this discussion in the past about wanting to make certain that we're not doing duplication of effort with DHS, so and that alignment there. So I think it's very helpful that we go back, whoever's going to take your place, to make certain that that information is imparted to us. But I don't know who decided somewhere along the way that we could drop that piece that was going to the feds.
Well, co-chairs and Senator Winters, we do indeed report to the feds. We also have the key performance measure report. Our advisory committee has done an annual report, which is part of their statutory requirement. I'm delighted to pull that all back together and send it to you. But I'm sure your inboxes and email are quite jammed with a lot of processes, but I'm delighted
I'm going to respond to that because we love your agency.
I know you do.
We love your agency. And as I said before, that's the tool that we need here in order to actually justify those things that we love about you. And so I just encourage you that information that you have, that you glean and you already have in your toolbox, that you share it with this body. As well, and you know, some of those, that work that you're doing with DHS is extremely important that we know because we fund them. And some of this, you know, are some policy implications that I think that we, you know, also would like to. So I just encourage you to pull that information together and let us review it.
Any more questions? Mary, I'm going to ask something of you as you go out the door. This is a public hearing, but we're going to have a work session, you know, towards the end of session. And I've heard what you're thinking of moving next and what you want to do next, but I'm not sure that's aggressive enough. And I'd like to have you think about what it would take to get to those foster homes on an annual basis, 100%, or even twice a year would be more appropriate. What those fines should look like, so they have some real honest meaning to them. Okay, and the fine I would think would be directed towards your agency. Not that I want an incentive for your agency, but I want to make sure that the work's being done is recognized. When you're in a situation where the fine is so small that it really doesn't generate change, that's concerning. And in most cases, if that fine's sitting there, they'll make the change before the fine occurs. So that needs to be something. Those are two things off the top of my head I can think of. I want you to be fairly aggressive in your ask. And the reason I want that is we are in a very unusual state in how we handle our seniors and disabled people. We do not have them in large institutions. We have them primarily in foster homes and assisted living facilities. We do not have good oversight. 10 years ago, we had foster homes that had never been visited for years other than to get licensed. We had no idea what was going on out there. We luckily didn't have any horrible, horrible cases on a regular basis, but we could have. We could have had some really bad stuff going on. We got kind of lucky, so to speak. So what you're doing is really, really important. You're our eyes and ears, and you need to be have the resources that you can do the job you want done. I'd like to see you visiting these homes at least twice a year, and those that are struggling have even more visits to them. So put together the package you need to have enough trainers, you can have more volunteers, look at fines or other issues that might be helpful to you. Okay? and bring it back to us. I'm not guaranteeing anything, but I'd like to see that in writing so this committee can consider it.
Thank you.
We'd be glad to.
I don't ask more. I don't ask most agencies to increase themselves. Representative Nason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I should ask licensing this, but you may know from your experience. I've been thinking about training, how you get the word out to foster homes, for example, and what kind of experience there is. What is the turnover rate? Are once a foster home, always a foster home, or did these come and go rather quickly? Is it in some kinds of situations, in some jobs, there's a high turnover rate, other jobs there's not. But in foster homes, once you establish one, is it there for a long, long time, or do people give up after a while?
Allow me, please, to respond to that, if I may, Representative and Senator and members of the committee. The turnover of foster homes isn't very high, in my experience. There's probably a new one or two in a community of the size of Corvallis every year, and one or two disappear. Some of them simply move to another city, and there's always a gap in us learning about that, about those moves and about those new facilities. In Corvallis, one owner has built 5 new foster homes in the last 2 years. These are very beautiful, brand new homes. They're fully occupied. My estimation is those are not going to go out of business very soon because of the investment in those new homes. These are brand new in the last 2 years. 2 of them set up near the hospital. 2 of them are further out to the edge of the city. I think in my tour of the foster homes, I gave them, in my judgment, about a C in terms of cleanliness, care, training of staff, the low turnover of staff or the high turnover. The more isolated they are or the further out in the country, the less turnover of staff. The closer into town where there are more people available, there is higher turnover. The sticking power of a caregiver in a foster home is generally longer than in the larger facilities, in my experience. Okay. The foster homes are not licensed by the state, they're licensed by the counties. They get out there once every couple of years. They have to, because they're relicensed every 2 years. And I found a couple of places, especially those distant from the cities, pretty poor. I mean, they were just not clean. These were places with one resident, a couple of them. I did encourage, and the state or the county people did go out and visit those 2 homes. And I don't know what the result of that is because they don't report to us. But my experience with all of those foster homes, and there's a colleague in Lane County who visited 90 foster homes in this last year. That was his mission. Mm. I don't know what he found, but we've talked about it in meetings. And I want to say another thing about our meetings. Every ombudsman meets with their deputy monthly, and the exchange of information there does go back to the state office. And we have issues like the ones we're bringing up with you that we kind of add them up and say, this is a very important issue, and we hope our deputy, and we know our deputy's going to take that back, and it will be a part of a package of information that could come to you. But that's a monthly review of what's going on in each of our districts by the people that are out there doing the work, the ombudsman.
Co-chairs and committee, I'd also like to share that in addition to the direct visits that we provide to adult care homes, we're very interactive with the operators. Right. Just in the last month, I have offered 3 trainings and hit almost all of the adult care home providers in Multnomah County. We understand that most providers are in this business because they love taking care of people, and we've got people with their heart in the right place that are trying to do a very difficult job. Operating one of of these adult care homes is a very complex enterprise. We've got one caregiver generally working in the home for 5 days, 24 hours a day, and then sometimes a relief caregiver coming in on the weekend. And so we have a series of conversations going with our provider community where we're helping them build a culture around resident rights, instilling those values, and also making our office a resource to them. Certainly we handle cases that are brought to us by consumers and their families. We're also a resource to providers when they need a consult on how to handle a situation from a resident rights perspective. I thought it would be interesting for this committee to know that every adult care home provider in Multnomah County has my mobile number that rings to the phone in my pocket because I want them to be able to ask questions. As a deputy, it is not unusual to spend half my work day answering technical assistance questions from volunteers, responding to their emails, responding to people in the community. So the work that we do directly investigating and resolving cases is important. There's so much more behind the scenes where I believe we're really heading off a lot of problems before they ever occur because of our education and outreach efforts.
Thank you. Any questions from the panel at all? Could we hear from the Chief Financial Office then? And committee members, we have people signed up, six people signed up for public testimony too.
Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, Tamara Brickman with the Chief Financial Office at the Department of Administrative Services, and I'm filling in for Mr. Art Ayer today. That's why his name is on the presentation. And I have literally four slides, so I won't be taking much of your time. And you've already heard most of the information about the governor's budget. The agency has actually two emerging issues, and that is, of course, expanding the ombudsman services to include facilities for residents with mental illness or developmental disabilities, and then also completing the phase-in of the public guardian and conservators services that were introduced in previous legislation. With respect to the long-term care ombudsman, it fits within the 10-year vision for safety, and that Oregonians are safe and secure wherever they live, work, and play. And in this particular instance, the agency budget reduces the incidence of elder abuse and neglect, and is an important part of the community in making sure that we're protecting folks in the facilities who are vulnerable citizens who are in facilities. As you can see, this is a growth budget from 2011-13 to the governor's budget. It's a significant growth, primarily driven by the increase in staffing to implement the new programs that the agency is responsible for. And then the investments are, of course, the phase-in of the two new programs that we mentioned, restoration of some funding for an FTE that was lost in other funds, and I think primarily that was related to some reduction in funds from the Old Americans Act, and then also an increase in one position by 0.25 to bring the position full-time, and I believe that position has to do with, and I mean,
it's our data.
It's the data person. I thought it was data, but it deals with data, and they brought that to full-time. And with that, that ends my presentation. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Representative Nathanson?
This is a technical question about when we see information such as increasing a position from 0.25 FTE to become full-time, sometimes that's because there's a policy decision. We've said, oh, you're allowed to have a half-time position, or you're allowed to have a full-time. But sometimes it's just the difference between a program started late in the biennium and it used up only the funds of a quarter-time FTE, but it was always allowed to be full-time. The distinction between, you know, the policy choice of what you're allowed to have versus just the budgeting, the technical budgeting and financial issues. So when we see something like this on this kind of screen, is this always the policy decision about how much they're allowed to have as opposed to the technical financial stuff that we get showing the the roll-up to a full biennium?
Co-Chair Nathan, members of the committee, that's a good question. And I believe in this case, this is related to a policy option package request by the agency because that position existed at a 0.75 FTE, and with the additional amount of work given the two new programs, in this case, it was a policy decision to add 0.25 FTE to bring the position full-time.
Thank you.
Representative Boone, I think you saw your hand up
thank
there.
You, Mr. Chair. And maybe this is a question for either Mary or David, but you say that the foster care homes are licensed by the county, and if you get a complaint, you report it to them, or how does it work? How do you close that circle so if there's something addressed by the county, or how do you know it is addressed, and wrap that up?
Co-chairs and representative, thank you for the question. The answer depends on the nature of the complaint. So let me lay out a few situations for you. Most of the complaints we receive from residents have to do with issues that are very important to them and their quality of life, but can be resolved through a conversation and the use of some planning. So visiting in an adult care home, this is a great situation, visiting with residents. We try and visit with each resident privately in her or his room if they care to. And we ask about how care is going. I was visiting a care home, knocked on a door. The resident wasn't super excited about speaking with me. She was playing video poker, but she took a minute to speak with me. I said, hey, I was curious, how long have you lived here? Oh, a while. How are things going? They're just fine, but I can't chew the food here. I said, oh, well, could you tell me about that? She says, yeah, they keep serving me steak and chicken, and I can't chew that. Gave me an opportunity to ask more questions of the resident. I said, well, what does your care plan say about your dietary needs? She wasn't familiar with that term, but just briefly, the care plan is the narrative document that every care facility writes to describe the individualized needs of the person they're serving. And it turns out there was a gap in information. Not sure how that happened, but with the resident's permission, we went to the provider, we pulled out the document, we were able to add some details, the problem was solved. Sometimes there are larger problems, and they may have to do with the conditions in the home. The physical facility may be in bad shape. The ombudsman's observations of staff or conduct may be concerning. In that case, it may be appropriate to reach out to the licensing agency and alert them to our concerns. The final type of complaint is our role in reporting abuse. Ombudsmen are not abuse investigators. However, we are mandatory reporters. Our agency policy and practices, if we see anything or hear of anything that sounds like it might be abuse, we report to Adult Protective Services, the agency that has the expertise in investigating these matters. Now, beyond that, when an ombudsman is the reporter in an abuse case, we track that case through completion and make every effort to review the final Adult Protective Services report. And if we have questions or feel that some things went unanswered or there were methods to improve that investigation, we'll provide that feedback to Adult Protective Services.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for your report. And David, I'm going to ask you one more thing, too, on my previous comment that I should have said something about. We are living in a society that, for the most part, is going to have more and more senior citizens in it, and the scope of your job is going to become larger as more and more foster homes are developed and built, as you mentioned, and as we close down nursing homes. So when you make that request to us, consider that also, what it looks like for the next several years as more and more people enter the foster homes and new foster homes are built. What your real needs are going to be as far as scope of your programs.
Yes, we will.
Okay, thank you.
Could you include in that scope of need, because I picked up that they're not only training the volunteers, but they're doing some training for providers?
Yes, that is correct.
My question that I had in my mind, if you're doing training of providers, where is the agency, DHS, and how they interface? Mm-hmm. I think, we need to know some of these interfacing and connections and who's going to be responsible for what as we move forward. If that particular activity is a part of DHS's budget, that maybe you need some of it in your budget, because we're a budget group that thinks in terms of dollars and where those dollars flow. The other thing I'd like to see is you build your report, because I think all of us, and that is the county's role, You know, what kind of things are you encountering when you actually go out to, and since the county has the ultimate licensing responsibility, so if you could separate those out so that we're getting a really clear picture of what the universe is and what problems that are being encountered in that universe, that would be extremely helpful from a budgetary standpoint.
Yes, we'll make that happen.
No further comments. I'll close with a little bit of personal stuff if I could. I visit 4 or 5 foster homes 3 or 4 times a year in my practice, and 1 ELF, and I'm continually impressed by how well people are doing in those. I have 2 ombudsman people that I work with regularly, Susan Day being the most common one, and they're all doing a great job. I'm really impressed. And I will tell you later that we have 1 ELF in our area that's struggling right now with medication problems, other issues. They're trying to get control of it. But those things do happen, but they're doing the best they can right now. I think they'll have it cleared up in the next few months. But thank you for the great job you're doing. It's always been a concern since I've entered this, and since Senator Winters was so kind to educate me on it, that we had this huge hole out there in foster homes and ELFs that we had no idea what was going on. And your agency has stepped up in the last 4 or 5 years to fill that huge gap. I feel much more comfortable that the people in the state, elderly and disabled, are really being watched over carefully, and I appreciate what you've done. Very sorry to see you leave. Very sorry to see you leave.
We're plotting, though.
We may have you back in a little different way.
Don't get away from us that easily.
On behalf of senators, members of the committee, and chairs, thank you very much for spending so much time and indicating the kind of interest you have in this program. It's a vital program in our state. Our frail elderly need this program. Some of you someday may as well. So let us thank you so much for your interest. And we'll be back whenever you need us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll pass along your support to our volunteers. It'll bring the world to them. Thank you so much.
We're going to have 6 different people come up. I'm going to call you up in groups of 3 if it's okay. And try to keep your comments down to about 5 minutes because we're kind of running a little short of time. So Charles Richards, Nicole Palmateer, and John Bartholomew.
Mr. Kocher, while folks are coming up, some people have provided public testimony or written testimony that's in a list for you to look at as well.
Thank you. Introduce yourself and give us your testimony, please.
Chairman, members of this committee, I want to say thank you so much for the things you have done for this group already. I think that it has really been a nice thing to do.
You have to introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Name for the record.
I already did it. Anyway, I'm Charles Richards. I live in Marion County. I'm vice chair of the Governor's Commission on Seniors here in Oregon, and I'm a professional volunteer. I have done the last 6 years. I get to be a nuisance around the Capitol quite a bit. And one of the things about being a volunteer, you always wonder if you're doing any good for the people that you really care about, the people at the bottom of the pole. And one of the nicest things about my job with the Governor's Commission is I've been a liaison to the long-term omnibus people. And I have to tell you, the level of professionalism of that group is just, if I need to get my battery recharged, that's the place I go. Because they really take their job seriously. A lot of volunteers are lackadaisical and they come when they want and don't, but those people are there day in, day out, and they do things that most people would never do, like that 95-mile drive. There are people who do far more than that, and I'm very impressed with that whole thing. And the other thing is, with the new job they have coming on board, they're going to need help because the training for those positions are quite different than this normal omnibus training. There's a lot more involved with that, and they're going to need help, and there's a lot more detailed work that'll have to be done. And I hope that you think about that when you're writing the numbers, because there will be a lot more as well. There'll be a lot more of us older people around at that time. So I just want to say that I'm very proud to have been a liaison with those folks and to join them at their meetings at every time I've been there. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Richards. Thank you for your service.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I am Nicole Palmatier here today on behalf of O4AD, the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities, sometimes referred to as the AAAs. We're just here to express our support for the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman. Our case managers and adult protective service workers work together and in collaboration and coordination with this office. They have such extraordinary value that we could never overstate that. They're such an important role in our long-term services and support in protecting our vulnerable individuals who are receiving care. We support their budget. We support their program. We, too, are sad to see Mary go, but we will continue working with her also in her new role, working with veterans who are seniors. So with that, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, member of the committees, for the record, I am John Bartholomew. I am the Government Relations Director at AARP Oregon. And we've submitted some written testimony on behalf of us, but also on behalf of the Campaign for Oregon Seniors and People with Disabilities, which many of us in the room are members of, when we are a coalition of the industry, labor, consumers, stakeholders, all working together with a common voice. And we all very strongly support the Long-Term Care Ombudsman's Office. One of the key things that we've really found is their culture of collaboration with stakeholders. I think that makes them extremely effective, and it has informed a number of policy decisions that have been made over the last few years, whether it's the need for a public guardian program or the need for the Silver Alert bill that was passed last year, as well as the senior spa special purpose appropriation that did include some funds for medication management training that we hope to see continued moving forward. So it's that culture of collaboration really makes them effective. It's not just staff, it's the volunteers. They participated in the process of creating the state plan for Alzheimer's disease. They get around, and they're extremely effective. So thank you for your support for them.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you, all three of you. Next is Cameron Smith, Jim Davis, and I assume this is Melissa Unger, but I can't really read the handwriting, so I guess she thinks she's... I think she's a doctor. I think she went to medical school to start...
She's a doctor.
Yeah, well, the way she signed her name looks like it. It says SEIM, so I think it's supposed to be SEIU.
So good morning, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And now that Miss Mary Yeager is coming over to our department, my main effort today is to make
sure... Stop talking now.
I feel like a pariah, but I want to make sure that this department does, or this committee doesn't recommend putting the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs under the auspices of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Office. But I want to make clear that I will be reporting to Mary on all things aging veteran services. I served three tours as a Marine in Iraq, but my most recent generation of veterans is only 6.5% of our veterans population. 52%, over 52% of our veterans are 60 to 100 years old from Vietnam, Korea, and World War II. Mary and Jerry are a dynamic duo. We are fortunate to have them joining our team for veterans, but they are still going to be in that aging universe. And what I think is most important is, as true leaders, they have built a culture and a team at the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Office with an amazing shell crew of staff that then leverages the engagement of a more engaged advisory committee under Mr. Dan Dunham and Bill Bard than I've ever seen on any other committee, and is also then the hundreds of volunteers that they leverage. It is not, budgets are important, the resources are important, but it's important what, more importantly, it's what we do with those resources that are entrusted to us. And there is no one that squeezes more value out of those resources than the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Office. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. LFO is calling you the poacher, and I'm going to ask you not do any more poaching in the Ombudsman's Office. You've done enough damage already.
Yeah. We don't like it.
We can make it work the other way, too.
Well, Mr. Chair, I got to admit, I mean, you've thrown that out there now. You got to decide, is that a crime?
I'll check with the Oregonian.
Oh.
Mr. Jim Davis.
Thank you, members of the committee. I'm Jim Davis, representing United Seniors of Oregon, the Oregon State Council for Retired Citizens, and the Governor's Commission on Senior Services. All of our groups have been very strong supporters of the Ombudsman Program since the 1970s, as have I, and I've worked very closely with every ombudsman since the first ombudsman, Marty Lemke, back in the 70s. And this is truly a great program, and we are here again to give our very, very strong support. As you have mentioned, the Ombudsman Program is one of the most popular programs in the senior disability community without fail, and there's no quicker way to mobilize our advocates than if something's going to happen to our Ombudsman Program. But I think it's even more important now that they have the expanded responsibilities, which is very, very cool. They play such a critical role in oversight and advocacy for our residents. Mary and her staff have just been doing a great job, and the volunteers, they always do wonderful work. Mary's going to be very much missed. How dare you take her away from us like this? But she's gonna be very much missed. She's done a wonderful, wonderful job, but we're very pleased she's going over to work with the vets, senior vets. It's a very, very critical area. So we strongly urge your full support for full funding of the Ombudsman Program. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I? Thank you, Mr. Davis. Senator Winters.
I just have to add, Jim is, Mr. Davis is also part of the Chronologically Advantaged Group, who's been around a number of years to see the evolution. But I do have a question, and that is, we had discussion about the gap. On this panel and talking about, you know, how veterans and other individuals that are falling through the crack in services and what have you. And I'm just hoping that, you know, I know Mary, and I know when Mary gets her arms wrapped around issues and what have you, that this particular topic that we were talking about here, that we will share that with Mary as she work on veterans issues. You know, certainly we're very fond of her. We don't like you poaching at all. But we also recognize that we can't hold her back. And if you think we're not plotting on this side, you've got another thing coming because we are.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Senator Winters. What I think is very powerful out of this is veteran services is human services, but we haven't always connected the two. And when we look at aging, disability, we are building that expertise, not trying to recreate wheels at the Oregon Department of Veterans for our specific population, but really trying to leverage what is already out there, both across the public and private sector. But a real, that collaboration, that leverage, we're going to try to do the same thing at a larger scale for our veterans that they've done at Long-Term Care Ombudsman. It's been office.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. And then Melissa Udger from SIM.
That's right. Thank you, Co-Chair Senator Bates and Representative Nathanson. You can just call me Dr. Unger if you'd like to. For, I don't have a degree. I just have bad
Nobody's
handwriting.
Nobody's allowed to complain about my handwriting
But
anymore.
For the record, I'm Melissa Unger, and I am the political director for SEIU Local 503. And we actually represent a lot of different members, 55,000 members across the state, but we do represent members who serve and do the work in nursing homes and a couple of DD facilities and adult foster care providers across the state. And so we represent many of the people that volunteers actually are working with day in and day out. And we believe that this agency is critical for both the workers, the people in the facilities, and it's a testament to how government can work well when we can bring government volunteers in and make sure that they are a part of our mission of keeping our community safe. And I think that it's a really great example of an agency that has continued to do its job, has found ways to continue to expand in spite of a small budget, and has continued to meet all the metrics that you all have set out for them. We also, I just think it's also important to note that we're, I think it's an important next step step for them to expand into facilities for the developmentally disabled. We think that's a really key element to what their work is. And I appreciate Senator Steiner Hayward's comments about the report and how all of this links together, because I do think there is an important link to the role they play. And so excited to see the support. You all don't need convincing, as I can tell from your comments today, and kind of excited to see where this agency can continue to go to really make sure that residents feel safe in their facilities. So thank you for your time.
Thank you all for your testimony. Questions? Seeing none, we've completed our work.
Not a question, but just a comment. I think David's taken this all very well. And he's got, you know, with all due respect, big shoes to fill, but I don't know the size of your feet, but I think it's really great. It's kind of like the adult dog taking the young dog under their paw, so to speak. And I'm sure that you guys
you
will be working together.
You know the Humane Society's out there in the gallery.
I'd like to ask for one last final comment. Senator Winters, I should have had the gavel today. This has been a program she's watched and helped grow and nurture for her entire career here. And Senator Winters, would you like to say a few last words before we close down
today?
You know,
none other than I think everyone has said it. It is very, very, very much a valuable program. I have watched it over the years along with Jim Davis. That's why I called him part of the Chronologically Advantaged Group. And Mary has done, you know, really an outstanding job. It's, she's grown the volunteers, the numbers substantially. She's done the training to making certain that they're equipped when they actually are involved in their not only investigation but service. I can't say any more about how much we actually appreciate all the work that you have done and. Because of that, we have expanded and allowed the growth in this particular program. You know, and with growth, you know, and I fully understand that with growth sometimes come other problems and obstacles. And I'm only asking you to bring those to this body, because we don't know when you're encountering those unless you actually tell us. As we go and plow new grounds, which we are, when we look at the foster care piece, and particularly the developmentally disabled piece, I think some of us who've been in this building a long time and who work in the field understand that there's going to be some, you're going to encounter some issues and problems, and that's the only way we will know how we can actually assist you as you carry forth your work and what you do. So I am sorry to see Mary move on, although I understand, and we should always be delighted when individuals that have been there that go on to other and better things. And I'm
not
sure.
Not better.
Well, yes,
helping other agencies become better.
But it's going to be that she's going to take. Oh, sheesh. But for her. You know, she has actually gone on because she's going to start some new endeavors.
Exactly. That's what we're saying.
Well, that's always better when we start some new endeavors.
All right. Okay.
Any other comments? We
it
are adjourned. Thank you for your service.
We didn't have a little sparring match.
Thank you for your service.
If we didn't have a little sparring match.